Hey everyone, welcome back to Radio Imbibe from Imbibe Magazine. I'm Paul Clark, the executive editor of Imbibe, and this episode is coming out to you on Tuesday, September 15th, and it is Negroni Week. We've been celebrating Negroni Week every year since 2013, mixing Negronis and raising funds for a range of charities with nearly $3 million raised over the years. But this is 2020, and like pretty much everything else, Negroni Week is operating a little differently in the age of the COVID crisis. First, we rescheduled Negroni Week's original dates from June to September to better respond to the crisis. Second, Negroni Week has moved online this year. In the past, we've had thousands of bars and restaurants worldwide participate by mixing Negronis and Negroni variations for their guests while making donations to charities. This year, with so many places still closed or under restrictions to fight the spread of the coronavirus, we're encouraging you to participate at home. If you live in a place where you can safely pick up a Negroni to go from one of your favorite bars or restaurants, then by all means, please do so. They really need your business at this time. For most of us, though, this Negroni Week is going to take place in kitchens and living rooms and in backyards and front porches, and that's not a bad thing at all. There are two things that are key to enjoying Negroni Week this year. The first is to head online to negroniweek.com and to make a generous donation to the charity partners there. That's another thing that's changed for 2020. All of our charity partners are organizations and initiatives aimed at helping out hospitality workers and the hospitality industry as we try to get through the COVID crisis, which has absolutely devastated our bars and restaurants. If you're in a position to do so, then please go online and donate what you can. And of course, it's not really Negroni Week if you don't have a Negroni in your hand at some point. In case you need a refresher on how to make one of those, we've got you covered with a primer from one of the world's great Negroni bars. It's Negroni Week, and over the years, we've seen countless variations on the classic turning up on menus and on Instagram feeds. But at the core of Negroni Week and forming the basis for all of this innovation is the original, the classic Negroni. For Negroni Week 2020, it only makes sense for us to share a classic Negroni from a bar that's given special love and consideration to the cocktail, Dante in New York City. Mixing a classic Negroni for us today is the bar's co-owner, Lyndon Pride. Lyndon, welcome. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having us on.
Now, when you first opened Dante in 2015, you put the Negroni Sessions menu at the heart of the cocktail list with a dozen different Negroni interpretations, including the original. Why did you do that?
Taking over Cafe Dante we're also inheriting really a piece of Italian and New York culinary history. You know, this cafe has been in existence when we took it over for 100 years in Greenwich Village. And it always celebrated the coming together of the Italian culture and the American culture here in the heart of New York. And essentially, we wanted to be able to continue that in our own way. And, you know, Dante was always known for coffee, cannoli, gelato, and so forth. And we really saw the opportunity to celebrate a cocktail that we were very passionate about and that we love, which kind of still pay tribute to that great Italian history and also the history of the American cocktail. So Negroni was, something that fit into that story beautifully. And it was also a drink that we were very passionate about and that we really love.
Now, you've got familiar Negroni relatives on the menu, like the Boulevardier and the Old Pal, as well as a lavender Negroni and a chocolate Negroni. How does the Negroni offer you such an opportunity to kind of dabble with these variations?
Well, I think one of the reasons why the Negroni is so increasingly popular and such a bartender favorite is because, you know, in its concept, it's such a simple drink. You know, we're talking about three ingredients. More often than not, those ingredients equal parts. And, you know, it's very hard to mess up what is a classic Negroni as long as you kind of stick to that formula. But where I guess the appeal is and what we really love about it is the versatility. You know, whether you're swapping out the base spirit, playing with different bitters, and obviously we're seeing more and more Italian bitters available in the US in the last few years, or you're mixing it with a different types of vermouth, whether they be sweet, dry, a bianco, and different houses and brands. I mean, there's so much versatility and there's so many different ways that you can take the drink. So I think it's very easily accessible. It's very easily understandable in the classic form. But then once you actually start playing with some of those ingredients, it opens up a whole new world.
And of course, it all comes down to the classic, all comes down to the original Negroni. And you're going to mix one of those for us today.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right. So please walk us through one.
Okay, great. So at Dante, our house style is more of a gin forward Negroni. So as I mentioned, a lot of the recipes calls for equal parts. We actually make ours a little bit more gin heavy. So I know we're doing audio, so I'm trying to enhance this, the wonderful sounds of the bar here. So today I'm actually preparing a Negroni with one of our favorite gins, which is Forged Gin. We're going to mix 1 ounce. Forged Gin works beautifully in this drink because of the, I guess, the citrus notes and some of the softer botanicals. We're using 3/4 ounce of Campari. And we're using 3/4 ounce of Martini and Rossi sweet vermouth. A couple of simple notes here. Obviously, we're going to stir to combine in our mixing tin. And I guess that through its simplicity, some little key aspects of making the drink really make a difference, such as obviously big, beautiful ice, frozen glassware. So we have a frozen glass here straight out of the freezer. Nothing prettier than perfectly mixed Negroni in a frozen glass on a hot summer's day, garnished with a lovely orange wedge. And you can take it from me, that looks and tastes delicious.
That looks like a fantastic Negroni, absolutely. Earlier this year, when bars and restaurants were first shuttered to stop the spread of the coronavirus, a number of nonprofit organizations pivoted their focus to provide financial assistance and support to some of the millions of bartenders, servers, cooks, and baristas who found themselves out of work and facing economic catastrophe. For Negroni Week 2020, all of the fundraising efforts are focused on organizations and initiatives that are working to improve the situation for hospitality workers and the hospitality industry. For this episode, I talked to Amanda Gunderson, a longtime bartender and brand ambassador, and one of the co-founders of Another Round, Another Rally. Amanda Gunderson is a longtime bartender and brand ambassador currently working for Beam Suntory. Along with Travis Nass, she co-founded Another Round, Another Rally in 2018, a nonprofit with the aim of providing financial resources and support to the hospitality industry in the form of reimbursement grants and educational scholarships to further the education of underrepresented voices in the industry and to supply emergency assistance to workers in bars, restaurants, and hotels who are facing unexpected hardship. Welcome, Amanda. Thanks for joining me.
Hi, good to be here.
I mentioned a little bit about the organization in my introduction, but fill us in a bit more on what your original goals were when you first founded Another Round, Another Rally.
Sure. So Travis and I have known each other for a really long time and well over a decade. And I feel like both of us have not really made a move professionally in that time that we've known each other without running it past the other one. He's just been a really good sounding board to me and I to him. And we've just become very close friends. And we were a couple of years ago just kind of kicking around some ideas. And we were just talking about what we thought was missing in the industry. And that was this place where underrepresented people, people of color, women, people in the LGBTQ plus community could get up into these more higher paying positions. A lot of those white tablecloth jobs that tend to be occupied primarily by white men. And so we were trying to figure out how to help lift people up into these better paying positions in the hospitality industry. So that was kind of number one. And then we were also talking about how most people in the hospitality industry do not have health insurance. I also had a friend who was managing a restaurant, and for the third time, she was going to court for one of her employees who was facing deportation. And so we were talking about, God, wouldn't it be great to have an emergency fund where, you know, you get into a car accident unexpectedly, you fall asleep on your way home from work because you just worked your third double in a row or something. And, you know, there's a fund there that you can tap into, or it's an unexpected funeral in a family, or, you know, as a brand ambassador, I've been able to fortunately travel the country and see bars all over America. And so I've seen many different types of emergencies. I was one time in a bar in North Carolina where they were in the middle of doing a fundraiser for a young lady who had just lost a child. And so just all of these things kind of kept coming across our path. And so we just said, you know, what if we did something that was two buckets of money, one for emergency funds and one for our professional development grants. And at the time, we were sort of thinking in this very lofty way of like, well, what if we could take people to all of the distilleries in the islands to study rum, but we took them first to the south to study what slavery's portion of rum was. And then what if we took them to West Africa to study rum? Then we took them to the island. I mean, we had these like crazy ideas of big scholarship programs that we wanted to involve people in. And then we also had emergency funding, and we had given away a bit of funding, a little bit of scholarship dollars, a bit of emergency funding, right before COVID hit, and we were in line to really launch after 2 years of planning and preparation at Bartenders Weekend in San Diego, which most of your listeners will know, but it's about 1,500 bar professionals show up to this. So we had one of the marquee events, and we had a drag queen that was going to host the event, and our event was called Deuces, and it was a synchronized bartending competition, and we had a bunch of teams from LA and San Diego that were going to compete, so we were going to do a good SoCal smackdown, and that was meant to be our first kind of introduction to the industry of who we are, and then also our first big fundraiser. But about a week and a half before Bartenders Weekend, everything in California closed down, and we just had to go into go mode because we were set up for emergencies. So we weren't necessarily ever thinking that everyone would lose their job on the same day, but you know, we were set up for the emergency funding. So we just pulled everything together and just built a mass of volunteers in the space of, you know, a couple of weeks.
Right. And, you know, with the onset of the COVID-19 crisis earlier this year, this kind of unexpected hardship that you guys were originally geared up to deal with became widespread throughout the industry, every part of the industry. How did the organization pivot and kind of adjust its approach in light of this crisis?
Well, originally what we wanted to do was $2,500 grants to people in emergency situations. And that's because that was the max number that you could get from the USBG. And then we had a few other organizations that we wanted to partner with so that we could do matching grants. So we could say, okay, you could get $2,500 from us, but we can hold your hand with all of these other, you know, partnerships that we had made and help you get some matching funding. So if you needed $10,000, we could help you reach that number. And that just seemed like a good spot for us. And we did give away some $2,500 grants prior to COVID hitting. But when COVID hit, that was the first thing that we did is we said, okay, what are we going to do? We had about $30,000 in the bank to put on Deuces. And so what we did is we said, okay, even if we get no other money and all we can give out is this $30,000, how are we going to handle it? And so we thought, you know, we could give out $50 here, $100 there, and we could reach more people. But we wanted to do something that was meaningful. So we settled on a $500 number. It's just something that you could put groceries in your belly, you could put some diapers on your baby, you could keep your lights on, and you could keep your cell phone working. That was kind of our thinking in that. And we got some pretty big funding right away. Patron Tequila gave us some money right away. Campari was a huge donor right away. Right about now, we've given away about $1 million, and half of that, I would say, has gone to undocumented workers. We immediately put everything out in Spanish and English from day one. It was about Spanish and English. We spent a lot of time getting the Spanish side up and running, dealing with the fact that undocumented workers don't necessarily want to apply online in writing. So we had to do a lot of that person to person over the phone. So that was a huge pivot for us, but we were able to kind of divide and conquer and be able to get that money into the hands that it's most needed.
You know, you mentioned the undocumented workers, and this is a group of people that for all of the other assistance that's out there in terms of government assistance and so on, they're just widely overlooked. What kind of necessity did you see in terms of highlighting these and making sure that these folks were taken care of and were given that kind of attention from you?
Well, we always tried to avoid federal funding. There's a lot of strings attached sometimes with federal funding. You'll find with a number of these bits of funding that you can apply for, they require a social security number. So that automatically puts you out of the running. So that was a place where we were very conscious about the funding, and we got very lucky with our lawyers. Our lawyers that represent us do pro bono work with us. They also, it's a 700 attorney company. They also represent like Planned Parenthood of the South and a number of other organizations. And so we felt very comfortable with them, and they've really held our hands through the whole thing about what's legal, what's not legal, what we can do and what we can't do. And we just have made some choices along the way so that we would rather turn down funding if it came from a place that the strings were going to be attached, that we couldn't give it away to undocumented workers. That's always been at the forefront of what we've wanted to do. So we were able to do that. And we, you know, right away, we just kind of had to pivot, because it was like somebody called us up within just a couple of days of launching it and said, hey, you know, people think you're a scam from ICE. So we moved everything to over the phone. That slowed down the approval process because you went from having a quick read to a 20-minute conversation for every application. And just out of nowhere, we got an email from these business students, these MBA students from Stanford. They had a teacher who right at the beginning of COVID had said for credit, what he wanted them to do was find a COVID-focused nonprofit to work with as business students to help them in their process. And this particular group of students specifically wanted to work with a nonprofit that was focused on undocumented workers during this time. So they just reached out to us and we said, yes, we could use your help. We're having a hard time getting the money out. We're having a hard time vetting. We need this to be streamlined. This is where we're bottlenecking. And it's almost like they literally just fell out of the sky and just really streamlined that process for us. And we were able to keep the money flowing at the same pace that we were to documented workers.
Now, we're having this conversation this summer. What kinds of challenges do you see the organization dealing with in the months to come? And what kinds of support do you need in order to pursue your mission, especially as the COVID crisis continues to impact the industry in the months to come?
Well, you know, I think any nonprofit organization would probably tell you the same thing. Money's the big one. The second big one is volunteers. So, you know, we always could use volunteers in terms of getting the money out. We have a number of initiatives that are coming up in the fall. We always have the tip jar going. We have a main bucket that you can donate just to another round, another rally. We have an initiative coming up. We haven't launched it just yet, but we're going to have a pretty substantial amount of money coming out for people of color. We have something that's launching at the end of the month where you can apply for funds if you're a Black-owned business. And we have a fund currently running for Black mental health. We are pulling together a couple of initiatives that we have for the LGBTQ plus, one in New York and one in Phoenix. We're pulling that all together to make it a national initiative for the LGBTQ plus community. And then we also have the ability to do peer-to-peer crowdsourcing or like GoFundMe style campaigns, which I think is important to note. Right now we have one going on for an industry favorite, our dear friend Chris Pitino, who obviously was running Bartenders Weekend. He's also a major mentor of mine. Before I worked at Beam Center, I worked for him at Pernod Ricard, and he's just a very dear friend. And so he's just recently been given this cancer diagnosis. And so we're running the fundraiser through our website. Important because we do take some processing fees out. We have to, because our server that we run the thing through does automatically, but you won't, because it's a charitable donation to your family afterwards. You shouldn't be hit with a tax bill next year. For him, we're planning on raising tens of thousands of dollars because of the type of treatment that he needs. We've also been able to do that for a number of restaurants throughout this. We can run these GoFundMe style campaigns and help you also avoid taxes in the long run. And then next year, we think that people are going to be hurting for a while. And so we'd like to continue on with these charitable donations. But we also are starting to pivot in the first quarter, the second quarter of 2021 towards professional development grants. People are going to need to get back to work. Employers are wanting to hire a more diverse staff. I think diversity is important, but I think when you're talking about D&I, diversity and inclusion, the inclusion piece is even more important. So how do you make a workplace that people feel comfortable in? You don't just have Black and brown and LGBTQ plus people with you at work, but you understand how to make it a safe place for everybody. So that's sort of where we're heading right now. We'd like to, we have a couple of transgender centers that we are in discussions with to also talk about bringing bartending skills to people who are a lot of times overlooked and bring them into those, some of those more high paying positions as we come back online. So there's a lot of heavy lifting coming up in the next, I would say, 5 years, to be honest. So what we're looking for right now, we're just in a constant state of fundraising and a constant state of bringing in volunteers to help us get the funds out once we have them.
And we're talking to you as part of our Negroni Week coverage. And Another Round, Another Rally is one of the organizations that Negroni Week is raising funds for in 2020. For those listeners out there who are preparing to participate in some way and make their donations and lend some assistance, could you share what kind of magnitude of a challenge the hospitality industry is facing in the months to come? And what's the urgency of providing this kind of financial assistance right now?
You know, I think the hospitality industry has been hit the hardest in this whole entire pandemic. And they're going to be, we're going to be the place that is going to take the longest to recover. You know, every time you see something that is like, okay, well, we're going to partially open again, everybody just wear your masks and be careful and don't go into bars. That's usually what the professional advice is. So it's going to take a long time before people feel comfortable being in bars again. It's going to take a long time before bartenders feel comfortable again. It's going to take quite a while before we're not serving somebody behind plexiglass. So that is going to be a very long road. And I don't need, it's not just the United States, it's globally. Our community is going to be the one that suffers the most. So right now it is extremely important. Another initiative that we have going right now is sponsored by the Nolet family, Nolet's Gin and Kettle One. And they've given us a substantial amount of money to be given away as just grocery vouchers. You can apply every month for a grocery voucher. You have to reapply every time. It's a simple, quick, easy application. We would like more and more applications to come in. We've got a lot right now, but like I said, they've given us quite a substantial donation. And so we want to give that money away. And you can just keep reapplying this month, next month, January, February, March, all the way. We've got a guaranteed bit of money coming in from this generous donation quarterly for the next bit of time. And that's really what we're looking for, is this type of long-term partnership with some of our big donors and even some of our small donors. We do have on our website a place where you could go on and donate monthly, even $5, $10 makes a huge difference to us. So for us, it is imperative to be bringing the money in, because it's going to be a long, I'd say a 5-year long journey before we really get back online in the way that we once were. And every little dollar counts for us.
Well, Amanda, thank you so much for joining us, and happy Negroni Week.
My pleasure. Thank you so much. We're honored to be a part of Negroni Week and honored to be a part of this podcast. Thank you for having me.
To support this work, just head to NegroniWeek.com, select Another Round, Another Rally, and donate any amount. Whenever we talk about Negronis, Negroni variations are always a part of that conversation, because as much as the original classic Negroni is a perfect cocktail in so many ways, the Negroni shares with other foundational cocktails a flexibility when it comes to composition and methodology, and that contributes to its role as one of the greats. And since it wouldn't really be Negroni Week without a recipe for a relative of the classic, here you go. One of the things we see every year during Negroni Week is social media lighting up with photos and recipes for Negroni variations and Negroni relatives. In looking for a Negroni variation for this episode, returning to a longtime supporter of Negroni Week over the years, the owner and co-owner of several Seattle establishments, including Rob Roy, Navy Strength, No Anchor, and Vinny's Wine Shop, Anu Apte. Hey, Anu.
Hi, it's so good to speak with you. It's been a while.
I know. It's funny because we live in the same city, but it's COVID. So yeah. We don't actually like drop in on each other and see each other that often anymore.
Yeah. Just going to say, it's so great to hear your voice.
So as I said, you've been a part of Negroni Week since the very beginning. And one of the things that's helped drive the Negroni's popularity in recent years is this kind of accessibility to modification that the Negroni has. How many different directions have you come at the Negroni over the years?
I have come at the Negroni from several different angles over the years. First, you know, I learned the Negroni as a drink that was served up with equal proportions. And I think that's attributed to the gaining popularity of the coupe versus the martini glass. And so everybody was putting classic cocktails in coupes. And it wasn't until a couple of years later that I learned, you know, the Negroni is actually better on the rocks. It's probably meant to be served on the rocks, also with a twist, without a twist. So subtle variations like that is where my journey with the Negroni began. And then I think I was at Zigzag one time and I was served an Americano. And I was like, this is it's a stretch from the Negroni, but this is kind of like in the family of that sort of, it could be, you know, considered very close to the family of Negroni. And that kind of got me going on all sorts of branches from the Negroni tree from there.
And then, I mean, like, as you started exploring those branches and seeing different, you know, kind of variations, some of the variations really started extending in a number of directions. And you've done a lot of those over the years too, right?
Yes. Yeah. I guess, you know, the first variation was upping the gin and not doing equal proportions. And then over the years with Negroni Week, we've been able to just have a small menu of just Negroni variations, which has been really cool. And it has allowed us to flex our creative muscles with just the Negroni as the blueprint. And so, you know, we've done everything from just upping the gin in the proportion to Negroni Jello shots to Negroni steams and foams, and really, you know, just tried to push the boundaries with the Negroni. It's been really fun.
For the variation you're going to make today, though, it's going to be something pretty simple and pretty, you know, pretty close to home.
Yes, the variation that I'm making today is inspired by one of my favorite artists, music artist Snoop Dogg himself, and of course the gin and juice kind of mashup with a Negroni. And these are all ingredients that you have at home. It's super simple to make, and it's juicy and it's delicious and it's perfect for summer. And it's probably been done a million times before at house parties. But we're gonna nail in those proportions today and add a little craft to it.
Excellent. Let's dive in. Walk us through one of these.
Great. So this is called the Steady Long, which it's a long style drink, and it's one of the first lyrics in the Snoop Dogg song, Gin and Juice. So we're going to do an ounce and a half of gin right into like the small side of a shaker tanner or Boston shaker, half ounce of Campari, right into that shaker as well. And then you get a choice of a juice blend here, and you can do 2 to 4 ounces. It's going to depend on the size of your glass. So I'm going to do an ounce of grapefruit juice, an ounce of orange juice, and just a half ounce of lime juice to just give it a little more acidity, a little bit more tartness. So I'm going to add that in. And then if you're at home, just go straight to your ice chest, or I got this little lovely, loud, magical ice maker. Ice just comes out of the door in my fridge. Use that. It's great ice. Then you're just going to pop on the top of your shaker, and you're just going to give it a really quick whip shake. That's it. That's all it takes. Pop the lid off. And then grab a Collins glass or a pint glass, and you're simply just going to take the cocktail from the shaker and dump it into your glass. It's icy, it's chilled, it has a nice dilution. And then really from here, garnish your choice. I'm going to use a grapefruit, and I'm just going to cut off a little peel. I'm going to make it pretty by grooming the edges, the rough edges off here, taking an angle on one side, and then spritzing the glass, which, you know, I wish the orange oils and the spritz made a sound, because how cool would that sound be if it existed? And then you just drop your garnish straight into your pint glass, and you have this lovely gin and juice Negroni mashup called the Steady Long. Voila.
Fantastic. And when we look at Negroni variations and a lot of different bars, a lot of different menus, sometimes they get really elaborate with their ingredients and their approaches to it. For something like this, it demonstrates that it doesn't have to be fancy. You can do something very relaxing, very refreshing with a Negroni variation, and it's all good.
Yeah, exactly. The foundation of it is so easy, and it's already delicious. So, you know, grab yourself a traditional Negroni, or switch it up just slightly like this, and it's wonderful. And you can even get fancy at home. If you have a little bit of citric acid lying around, add that to your orange juice to bump it up a notch. You could keep out the lime juice, and then maybe you feel a little bit fancier, a little bit more molecular with your cocktail making and basically this party punch that we just made.
Now, as you know, in Negroni Weeks of the past, we've asked bars and restaurants to get involved by mixing Negronis and Negroni variations all week, and most importantly, donating to charities. This year, we're asking everyone out there to get involved, our listeners, our readers, cocktail drinkers of all types, and all of the charities that we've selected are channeling these donations to the hospitality industry and to hospitality workers trying to help people get through the COVID crisis. You've got a handful of bars and a number of employees. How pressing is the crisis right now for folks working within hospitality? And how critical is it that people who are in a position to do so make these kinds of donations during Negroni Week and financially support these organizations that are working to help bar and restaurant workers?
Donations to help restaurant workers and restaurants, anyone in the hospitality industry right now, are critical. It's at the critical level where we are at this tipping point. If we don't get help now, already 40% of restaurants and bars have closed. The rest are going to close for our employees. They're no longer getting that $600 check every week. We are, as restaurant owners, I'm sure my colleagues as well, doing everything we possibly can to rehire staff. But unless we have some sort of support, that is just not going to happen. So our guests, we're relying on our guests, everyone listening to this podcast, everyone out there. It's so wonderful that Negroni Week is giving back to the hospitality industry in our community because, like I said, it's critical right now.
Well, thank you so much for making this variation for us and for sharing with us what you've got going on during Negroni Week and how everybody should and can get involved.
Thank you so much.
The Negroni, of course, is one of the core cocktails in the classic canon. Its simplicity of preparation coupled with its complexity of flavor make the Negroni not only an essential cocktail, but also give the drink a kind of comfort food quality. To explore this comforting aspect of the Negroni a bit more, we ask Brad Thomas Parsons, the author of works including Bitters and Last Call, to write an essay for the Quench column in our September-October issue and to share that piece with us here too.
In recent months, amid the unrelenting COVID-19 pandemic, instead of browsing the aisles of Brooklyn Wine Exchange and chatting up the staff for recommendations, I've stocked up on half bottles of vermouth via prepaid curbside pickup, with a quick wave and a muffled behind a cloth mask hello. I picked up a mixed case of Italian whites, Calabrian chilies, and salumi at Popina, a small restaurant in my neighborhood that transformed itself into a bottle shop and provisions outpost. And through takeaway cocktail service, I got to see some of my favorite familiar faces from a safe distance behind the bar. I stopped by Grand Army for Boilermakers and a tropical punch, also swinging by the makeshift takeout window at Leyenda for a frozen margarita served in a paper coffee cup alongside chips and salsa. While a welcome relief, none of these experiences can replicate the nostalgic buzz of being inside any of these bars during service on a busy Thursday night, but it has offered a spark of hope to an eventual return to some sense of normalcy. And while stay-at-home orders have had many of us perfecting our sourdough starters, working on puzzles, and making far too many loaves of banana bread, the return to cocktail hour has served as a mile marker for the end of yet another day in a period when each day blurred together and measures of time were fluid suggestions rather than clear demarcations on a calendar. Without the ability to meet for a drink after work, we've put our decorative home bar carts into regular service, and we return to those comforting, familiar classics. A martini or a Manhattan comes replete with memories of drinking in the wild at steakhouses, hotel bars, and cozy cocktail dens. And for me, it's the transportive power of Negroni that offers the ultimate make-at-home ease and comfort while summoning a sense of alfresco freedom. The Negroni's Italian heritage instantly evokes La Dolce Vita, but its spirited backbone elevates it from the spritzy aperitivo category. It's an adult drink, bittersweet, herbaceous, and botanical, something I can order without hesitation at most bars, and one I know I can always quickly stir up for friends stopping by before heading out to dinner or make for an impromptu nightcap. This year, the Negroni's been by my side through countless virtual happy hours, and with each sip, I can't help but think about those Negronis of days and nights past, and where I was when I drank them. Whether it's the first one I had at the Camperino in Galleria in Milan, or the many iterations I've sipped at Dante in New York's West Village, of the countless Negronis I've ordered out, I've only ever sent back one, served at a contemporary Italian restaurant. But right now, I'd reverse that decision just to be able to be sitting in the buzz of a busy restaurant, sharing bowls of pasta, and drinking with friends. Some of our favorite bars are now, sadly, gone forever, casualties of the pernicious virus. I know I will never again take a casual drink at a bar for granted, but through it all, the Negroni's signature red glow illuminates like a beacon, stirring memories from the past and, hopefully, thoughts of better days ahead.
That's it for this round. Head to NegroniWeek.com to find out more about this year's event and to make your donation. And swing by our website at imbibemagazine.com for more stories and cocktail ideas. You can find Imbibe on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, and Pinterest, and be sure to follow this podcast for future episodes of Radio Imbibe. And if you're not already a subscriber to the print or digital issues of the magazine, just follow the link in this episode's details and we can help you out. Have a great Negroni Week, and I'll be back with you again later this month.